Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode number 9 of Reappropriate the Podcast. I'm Jen, and I'm the blogger at Reappropriate. And I'm really excited to bring to you guys a very special episode of the podcast where I've invited the wonderful ladies of the Ladies of the Roundtable podcast to talk today about issues of feminism and in the gaming and community. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the panel today, starting with Carmen. And then, Carmen, if you want to introduce your fellow ladies.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having us, Jen, and we're excited to be here. Of course, I'm Srivasta, or Carmen, whichever you'd like to call me today, and I am here with my lovely ladies of the round table, the luscious Nikki. I think she's over there.
Hey.
Nikki D'Angelo, Star Citizen AA, as well as Monster Mash Pixie.
Hi!
My crew, we're in the house.
So, Carmen, do you want to tell us a little bit about your podcast as well? Because listeners of this podcast may not be too familiar with you guys.
Sure. Ladies of the Roundtable was established almost a year ago, formally, by myself and a couple of good close friends. You guys know Bonks, who will be back. Don't worry, she'll be back. She's actually working on a project. She hasn't forgotten about us. And Miss Pixie, and then came on to the scene graciously, and we were very excited, Miss Nikki. What we do is several different things. We are a live podcast media outlet with a focus on the female demographic, as well as we have a charity foundation for STEM education for girls. Scholarships, that is. And we use the video game platform as a base or a jumping point to get more young girls involved in science, technology, engineering, or math, or STEM. So everything we do generally focuses on giving back to the female community and geeks for equality.
So this is something that people can donate to?
Correct. And you can donate via our website. The link is down there. You'll find it on the navigation bar there, and it explains the whole charity, the way the scholarship works, and what our goals are beyond just the scholarship.
Awesome. Well, I really want to thank you guys for coming out today to talk about many of the different issues that face women in the geek and gaming culture. And I think that this is a pretty hot button topic because I sort of threw out a few questions on Twitter today. Starting with basically the statistic that there's a stereotype against women in gaming culture, and yet roughly 48% of gamers are women. And yet there has been in the last couple of months quite a bit of hostility towards women in geek and gaming culture. I actually threw out a tweet asking whether or not the people on my timeline felt as if the gaming culture was still hostile towards women, and Shoshana Kesok, who is tweeting from @ShoshanaKesok, tweeted back immediately and said, just looking up the words gamer and gate together, and you'll find the mass intolerance and hatred against women going on. And following that was, a huge Twitter conversation about Gamergate that I was involved in. So without further ado, I'm maybe less in the whole gaming community as you guys are. So I was wondering if maybe someone wants to give us a quick rundown as to what is going on right now in the gaming community for my viewers who maybe are less in the gaming community and gaming culture right now.
I'm going to throw that one to Miss Pixie because she's been waiting for that question, specifically coming back from Geek Girl Con as representing Ladies of the Roundtable.
Right. And before you do, Pixie, I just want to say to everyone who's watching, Pixie is at the airport right now, having just come back from Geek Girl Con, and I think she gets a massive round of applause for just showing up here. And she is on her phone at the airport. She was so excited to talk about this.
So the thing is as with any movement and as with any real issue that anyone faces, there are front runners for these issues. And for us, right now, one of the big headline names is Anita Sarkeesian. And the thing is, I think a lot of what people forget to bring up when they're talking about equality within gaming is they forget that it is equality and that it's important to remember that and to keep that balanced perspective. And, it was really great hearing, I met Susan Eisenberg, a wonderful woman, does the voice of Wonder Woman in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Absolutely beautiful, wonderful woman. Super near and dear to my heart because I remember watching Justice League. And one of the things that she said is, you know, for anyone these days, it's not necessarily like follow your heart, it's follow your skills. And that's something that a lot of people need to remember, is that women also have skills for being in gaming and developing games. And it's something that we should push for and we should strive for. And there's a lot of backlash because I feel like what's happening is we're getting some of these unmitigated voices who are the frontrunners for feminism when it comes to gaming, and they're not giving the most balanced perspective. And I think that's really important to remember, is that we as a whole, when it comes to women, need to understand that balance. One of the big issues is, you know, women are being threatened with, like, death threats. Brianna Wu, it happened to Brianna Wu. It's happened to Anita Sarkeesian. And this is not okay. Like, it is never okay. It doesn't matter if you're male. It doesn't matter if you're female. Like, people deserve respect because we're all human. And so it's really important that we kind of band together and we really work with one another. And I think another important thing is we need to stop identifying this fight as an us versus them. It's not women versus men. It's not us versus you. It's us as gamers together. And that's super important. Because if we want the gaming community to continue to grow and to continue to become, you know, this upper tier echelon for esports and all of these amazing things, we have to work together. We can't tear each other apart. That's such a huge hindrance.
I think that's a really important point. You know, from kind of being a little bit on the outside of this whole issue, one thing that sort of surprised me was what seemed to be a sort of divide in the gaming community about who constitutes like a real gamer versus who isn't. And I think that the Gamergate thing seemed to really be drawing upon lines that are trying to divide the gaming community into who was authentically a gamer and who wasn't. And I think it fell down gender lines, but I find that sort of like a false dichotomy. Like, why are women gamers persisting less authentically gamers that we have to kind of prove ourselves? That's the thing that really surprises me, considering, again, you know, statistics now say like 48% of gamers are women. So, you know, if fully half of the gamers are women, why would you still be questioning whether or not women truly belong in the gaming community? Or do you think that maybe that's not the right way that Gamergate is putting things across?
So I think some of it's just in general snobbery. Like, and this isn't me being mean, but as a competitive gamer, like, you want to be the best, and you want to be like, what are your credentials? Like, can you beat me in this game? Can we 1v1? And that doesn't determine whether or not someone's a gamer. Like, if you play video games, and that is a hobby that you enjoy, like, you are a gamer. Like, you don't have to be on Curse playing in esports professionally. You don't have to be on Navi playing esports professionally to be a gamer. You have to have a passion for gaming, and you have to play video games. Mm-hmm. And I think far too often people are trying to push into this realm of heightened competitiveness to determine whether or not people are gamers, and I don't think that's okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, the definition of gamer has been taken to the extreme with the Gamergate hashtag.
It has.
Just because you play games on Facebook or console versus PC, which is the old definite war, console versus PC, PC Master Race, by the way, it's just your opinion, and your opinion does not negate someone else's. So as gamers, we need to be able to, you're right, Pixie, stick together and lead by example, because it's hard enough for us in the last 7 to 10 years to become mainstream and to be able to come out of the closet, if you would, and say that we are gamers and wear it proud with all of the t-shirts and all of the branded materials and all of the stores popping up that now we can go actually get our hands on games without feeling like we should, you know, we have to be stuck in a basement. Why make it harder for ourselves? You know, and just like the tag real gamer girl or fake gamer girl, does it matter if I like games as a female? I like games. And I know a lot of you women out there hate that tag gamer girl. So instead of bitching and complaining about it, why not come up with something that you want to identify yourself as and go with that? Because it all starts with you. You know, that's why we've developed this platform of podcasting, social media, and all these outlets to be able to have freedom of speech, not to tear each other down and attack people like Brianna Wu, who had an opinion that you don't agree with. Nikki, what do you say to the Gamergate hashtag? What does that mean to you? What does it represent, if anything?
I think my age takes me a little bit out of this, because it seems to be very much centered in that under 30 group right now, from what I see, from everything I read, from everything I do. I've been gaming all my life, and I've been MMO gaming all my life on raid teams that were very, 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 you know, if you want to say it, that we were so meticulous and so nuts about having the right people on the team, and never was there this separation of girl, guy. It was who had the best skill, and all of a sudden this thing is blowing up on me, and I have to start getting into what the younger folks are talking about, and this worries me, because it's amazing how, as the gaming industry has grown and how people have moved from sitting across the table from one another when I was a kid to hiding behind a microphone, a keyboard, and a mouse, how much more belligerent people get towards somebody else in the industry, you know, somebody else that they might be playing against or somebody else that they might be playing with. This doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why we've come this far and we're jumping back that far at the same time. You know, I deal with my own, you know, trolls daily because of what I am. And I can't imagine that just because you're a girl that you have to deal with these things. I mean, aren't we all the same when we're holding the mouse and keyboard and playing a game? This is ridiculous. So my question here is, I can tell you right now, I'm reading an article in Forbes as we speak. This is not a big issue in that it's widespread amongst a large number of people. It's a very vocal minority that's taking over,
yeah.
Right? So I like Pixie's statement that it's not us against them, it's not man against woman, it's gamers to unite and show that we're not like this. You know, isn't that what you were trying to say? This isn't us. This isn't what we're about. And I think that's what it needs to be. It's not a female-male thing. It's a, let's fix the impression that people have of gamers as a whole. We're a community, one community together. And, you know, when we're on the other side of a computer screen, who the hell gives a you know, who cares what sex the person is? Who cares what sexual preference, what color, what race, what religion they are? There's somebody that you're playing with. It doesn't matter. So.
And I also, I really love what you're saying, Nikki, and I also want to throw in there that, like, I think one of the things that really bothered me about the Gamergate thing was the idea that there needed to be rigid ideas of who a gamer was. Like, earlier on, Carmen, you pointed out that there was, like, the battle lines are drawn between the PC gamer versus the console gamer. Well, I'm not the console gamer, and I don't think that makes me less of a gamer than someone else. I think the point is that the definition of a gamer should be something that's broad, that should be able to include people of different genders, different races, and, like, different, you know, preferences for your platforms. I think it really just is about the passion and that you have towards gaming and how you explore the culture and the community, and really everything else that you bring to it is just stupid details, you know?
And you can see that in the quote that I gave you, console versus PC, that used to be such a big deal, and now we've come so far away from that we are all just gamers.
Right.
So again, Nikki's right. why does it have to be this niche group that has to spoil the batch for all of us? It doesn't have to be that way. You know, there's so many developers out there, indies or AAAs, that are spending hours, if not months or years, making something that they feel you will enjoy, that potentially they've taken time away from their families, hours that they've put in, that is like a full-time job plus, to bring you something, and you're going to be upset because the color is blue versus green, and you're going to sit behind a keyboard and just flame them? Where do we get off as a human being or as a gamer that's okay? It's not okay. It's important that you treat the developers with respect, because when those games go away, what are you going to do with yourself as a gamer? Again, I mean, I'm just speaking from my personal opinion. I know that, you know, each of us has a game that we really enjoy and that we play on an everyday basis. Think about that being gone. Just gone.
Right. That's...
So I did just want, like, I think that's a really important point. And one thing that really struck me when I was researching for this podcast was that, you know, I'm somebody who likes to pull up statistics. That's sort of my style of writing and thinking about issues. And what really alarmed me was when I pulled up the statistics for how many developers and designers are women still in 2014 in the gaming industry. And I read an article that said something like 70% of designers are men and 90% of programmers are men. And I wonder if, well, so two things. One thing that just really bothered me, because, you know, if 50% of gamers are women, but most of the people creating these games, at least in the mainstream, are not women, are we getting sort of a one-sided game access or kind of game that we're getting? And is this something we should be concerned about? Is this contributing to the kind of culture, that bro culture that people have talked about in terms of the gaming community, and what we can be doing to solve that? Because I know you picked up on issues of independent game developers, and I wonder if maybe that's the solution.
There are buzzers going off. I definitely think that affects the like, quote-unquote bro culture that you see within gaming. And I do think it makes games one-sided, because if you look at a lot of women don't care about TNA. I mean, like, TNA doesn't matter to us. We want, like, a well-developed plot on, like, a majority scale. So we need people who understand that and who are going to, you know, push for these things in a video game. We need people who are going to push for this well-developed plot and who are going to be like, you know, TNA doesn't really matter in this game because we're building it for women. And, you know, one of the great things is The Sims. Like, The Sims is played by men and women because the focus isn't necessarily on the players. The focus is on the type of gamer who would want to play it. And that's a really important thing that I think developers as a whole need to think about. They need to think about, what kind of gamer do we want playing this game? And take sex completely out of the equation. Because it has nothing to do with it.
There's studios out there like Grim Brothers Studios that have upcoming game, which is Dragonfin Soup, that work with brands like us to ask the questions, the hard questions, and find out what women want to play. Why? What would we want other than, you know, the obvious? Good storyline, great mechanics, but from a female perspective, they're asking the hard questions, and they're not afraid to put it in their game. And they've taken this awesome sandbox game and made it appealing across the divide, whether you're male or female, but also have given us the things that we've asked for in the past, like armor that covers everything up, because if I'm actually supposed to be entrenched and immersed in this game, a push-up bra and some scale male panties is not going to cut it when I'm crashing through everything, dual wielding. I'm not going to make it very far. And I know this because I'm an intelligent female that wants to play a game and be able to say, this is my character that I've created from the ground up. So there are some companies out there, and you guys know who you are. I can't name everyone who's supporting us and striving forward to be able to have equality. But there are developers out there that really think about these things and really want to make a change. Now, there are some developers and some studios out there that are AAA that won't make the statement or push the boundary because they're afraid of the bottom line. Now, that is something that is true and is a reality and does make it hard and difficult for the times that are happening right now with the Gamergate, but it doesn't negate that we're moving forward. Look at IGDA. You know, there are advocacy groups out there that are helping to make it possible. We're at this level. We need to be up here. So it takes all of us.
And I post this question out to Twitter, and Refresh Daemon, who's tweeting it at Refresh Daemon, pointed out that, you know, we can think about gaming and being more inclusive towards female gamers as trying to change game marketing to make it more or less gendered, and also to think about game design and how it becomes more or less gendered. And I sort of countered with, like, I'm actually sort of two minds with this whole idea of how to market towards female gamers, because on the one hand, I think that it's nice to have designs of games that are more targeted towards female consumers, but on the other hand, I feel like sometimes it goes a little bit too far, and you have what I'm calling, like, the pinkification of video games, where some game developers create these games which they think are targeting women, but is really this sort of, like, really obnoxious stereotype of what women really want. Like, it's really Barbie and really pink, and it's all about dress-up. And I sort of was grappling with this afternoon, like, what is really the distinction there between how we can really target the female consumer, and whether it's we want sort of gender-neutral marketing or whether we really want them to target female gamers. And I think it occurred to me, Carmen, that it's pretty much exactly what you said, that we really just need to broaden games in general. And Pixie kind of talked about this too, like creating different kinds of games, like sandbox games and more puzzle games and just different things that are going to appeal broadly.
I got a question for you. So in one part of the story, we're talking about how we should all be considered equal, right? All be together. Mm-hmm. And then another part, we're talking about targeting women.
Yeah.
But don't the women that like games, like myself, like you guys, all anyway follow a certain genre, a certain game that they want to play? They're not drawn to it because it was made for women. They're drawn to it because they like what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point I'm making. We're all just gamers. We're drawn to quality games.
I think sometimes what's going on is that it's the adverse effect of marketing towards 18-year-old boys that like to see girls in a skinny little dress holding a sword and beating on rats, you know? That's the part that I think turns women off. When you go into a game like Aeon and you look at what the girls wear in that, it's essentially a Japanese anime schoolgirl running around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the game genres and types are out there. It's the fact that they overly market them towards these young men that just like to see women in that way that lead women away from it. Otherwise, I think those games would have women players in large abundance,
And I'm actually going to say something controversial and say, you know, I think having the option to have, like, the anime schoolgirl outfit isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if you're a female gamer and you're trying to build a character from the ground up, and let's say you're an RPGer like me, I like the option of creating a character who maybe would decide to wear the anime schoolgirl outfit or, you know, like, a chainmail bra and crash through a wall. Maybe that's something that would work for my character. I think the difference is that the games that are inclusive of women are going to have options. So you can choose not to do that if you want to. But most games provide a lot of options for their male characters and relatively few options for their female characters. And I think it makes it more difficult as a female gamer to put yourself in the game and feel like you have as much control over your experience as do other gamers.
I know. One of the things about the game that I cover, Star Citizen, is that they have the male character model right now, and they're being very, very, very cautious and deliberate in the creation of the female content to break, you know, character model, to break away from that, you know, skinny waist, you know, nice sized bust, beautiful every day of the week type character, and trying to give it more of a balance of what would be realistic, you know, because they're space fighters, space pirates, space traders, and they're trying to take a really long time creating the character model, so it's actually realistic and appealing to women that want to play the game. So I give them a thumbs up and applause because they're doing that. I'm not sure how it will work out in the end, but I like the fact that they're doing that, marketing it towards, you know, everybody instead of just that one piece. But I understand where you're coming from, that you want the option for it. My issue is that seems to be the only option most of the times is the skimpy little, you know, outfits, and that's it. Yeah,
and that's just the thing. Like, I, you know, sometimes you want to have the option for that, and sometimes you don't. And I think that we just need to broaden the what we have available to us. One, I think I really liked your point about spending more time just developing female characters in general. It sort of reminded me of, you know, the whole conversation about the development of BioShock Infinite and the whole time that they spent developing the Elizabeth character, whether or not the end result was a great one or not, we can really debate. But I did really enjoy the idea that they spent time thinking about that. And that, to me, is less an issue of, like, creating the best female character, even though I would have loved that, and more about spending time to create a quality game. And I think that showed in that game, that they spent time thinking about it.
That's good. Then you have the opposite with Ubisoft saying that they can't create...
You know, the reality is male, female... whatever you want to identify yourself as, we all want to feel important that the studio has taken the time to include me, the gamer. And knowing that I'm going to spend my $60 or my $100+, whatever it is, on the founders pack, you know, the economy being what it is, we are becoming very picky on what we're going to buy. You know, or what's coming out in the next 3 months, 6 months, as well as very, very, let's say, deliberate in whether we're going to spend a week, 2 weeks, or a month in said game and move on to something else. So in defense of the studio, there has to be some way that they make a happy medium, because they have to make their money to employ these people at that studio, because we can't make everyone happy. So it is a very hard job on their end to determine what makes us as a gamer happy. And it's not going to be 100% all of the time. So we can't just go to social media and just start picking a fight because something isn't up to snuff where you expect it. And remember what happens when you have expectations, you know, or assume, you make an ass out of yourself all over social media, and you think it's just going to go away. That stuff's going to be there forever, young people, forever.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that it's important to say, before you post it, take a minute, just 1 minute, read it to yourself and see if you would like that said to you, or whether you think you're going to want that to be out there for infinity because you can't take it back.
And I know we lost Pixie very, very briefly, and hopefully she'll be back, but I actually think that's a nice transition sort of back to Gamergate, if we can do that real quick, because one of the main things when I posted the prompt for this podcast out there, I basically got a massive conversation on Gamergate on my Twitter. And I had people across the board talking about Gamergate and weighing in. And really it was about the tone of the debate more than anything else. And I think that this is a sort of a good chance to sort of jump into how the internet is facilitating maybe these pretty nasty comments, and how that's maybe coloring the way that we're having this conversation. So I had everything from people who were saying, like Shoshana Kesok at Shoshana Kesok's is her Twitter handle. She said, "The narrative Gamergate is built on the foundation of slander, harassment, and threats against women." And she also pointed out what we talked about a little bit earlier, which is the Brianna Wu incident, which happened last week, which were death threats sent through Twitter to a game developer. Sorry, I'm just gonna mute you a little bit, Pixie. There we go. Brianna Wu getting some death threats over Twitter in relation to Gamergate. All the way over on the complete other side was someone named HoggisMCF, who's tweeting at HoggisMCF, who said the actions of a despicable few should not represent the actions of the moderate many in Gamergate. HoggisMCF doesn't believe that the things people are saying in Gamergate are representative of all gamers, but also says that he doesn't think Gamergate is as hateful as people are making it out to be. And so, you know, I thought that was really interesting because it sort of went across the board as to whether or not the tone of the debate was extremely hurtful and harmful and harassing, all the way to it's really not all that bad and people should just kind of get over it and, you know, this is just the nature of the beast and it's the internet. And I will say that I haven't been following the whole conversation as much, but I do know that my experience with the internet is that it really facilitates a lot of really trollish behavior. And I'm wondering if maybe the internet has really degraded the quality of the debate here, such that a really important and necessary conversation about women in gaming is now getting completely lost by what is truly criminal and not okay behavior.
Right.
And I wonder, I know that you guys kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how social media maybe facilitates really extreme comments. So I'm wondering if you guys want to jump in on that a little bit.
I'm gonna say, Gamergate or not, the internet has introduced a disconnect between human beings in general, and being or having empathy towards someone else. And it just, all of a sudden, you can make a comment, and it can be hurtful, and words do hurt other people. It's just bullying on the internet sometimes, and I believe, and this is just my perception, some people think that they'll type something or put it out there, and then, oh, well, the person will just ignore it or not read it, and they'll be okay. That doesn't happen in some cases, especially when you talk about teens, tweens, or early 20s who are not being parented, and are all over the internet. It causes a separation of humanity. You can see it in what's going on in the schools, what's going on the Facebook bullying and other places, that parents are really tightening the reins or trying to tighten the reins and watch and monitor their kids. And then you've got the other end of what's happening in our community, where this Gamergate started out as something of a short debate on whether media has the correct perception of us as gamers, and then it just went off to the left. I mean, narrative just blown. Pixie, well, I know you got something to say.
Okay, so Gamergate actually started after the Zoe Quinn scandal, where Zoe Quinn was accused of having sexual interactions with a lot of small game development people in order to push her game, Depression Quest, forward towards release on Steam and things of that nature. And when people reviewed the game, one of the things that they didn't disclose was that she had done this. And a lot of these people knew full well, because they're people that had interactions with her. And so Gamergate really did truly start off for, like, journalistic integrity. But it's been taken and it's kind of been bastardized into this large community of some of its trolls. That is their playground, and that words don't hurt. Simple fact is, they do. I mean, when you're making death threats towards someone and the FBI has to investigate, like, that's a problem. And then for some of Gamergate people, I actually agree with their opinions. I think that some of the time they bring up a lot of really quality information that people don't think about. And I think that, you know, truly, Gamergate as a whole has a message, but I think that it's the true message is being drowned out by some of the more vocal parties. And right, that's just a fact. You look at any movement, you look at any true revolution in, like, any amount of time, and you're always going to have, like, the loudest, most ignorant voices are going to be the ones that are heard. And it's just a fact. And, like, you watch TV, you watch the news, and it's always the loudest, most ignorant person that's on the news talking about a situation. Like, it sucks. It's just, that's a fact of how it is. So it's really important that you disassociate yourself from that negativity of that message, because overall your message isn't going to be heard if you're drowned out, if it's drowned out by you know, 10 million people who are screaming for no reason.
You know, and that's part of the reason why we decided to start Ladies of the Roundtable. We brought a group of women together from various generations and genres of gaming, and we're able to sit at a table and have a conversation about character development, stats, development of the programs used, everything that we love about gaming, and not tear each other down, not just call each other, you know, names and your mama this and whatever because you don't agree, but we're able to have a full-on two-hour conversation. At times, we run out of time. We have to stop ourselves from talking and engage with a primarily male audience because actually a big percentage of our audience is male, and we have a good time. And in turn, be able to bring in other groups like Rise Up Gaming and Mog Nation and huge communities that want to do the same thing as we do, which is progress the community for a better reason, giving back within ourselves to show the mainstream media as well as other people who say, you're a gamer? Ew. You know, you're different. That we can do great things. Child's Play, for example, great thing. Extra Life, for example, great thing that we do every year, and we give thousands of dollars to charity, and then we have things like this Gamergate that make us look like idiots. You know, so again, it's all about perception. And we lost Pixie, but I bet she'll be back.
And Nikki, you were like nodding like crazy, so I kind of want to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah, there's not a lot more to say about it. I'm glad that Pixie chimed in because it is it did start off being about what happened to get the game out, right? What happened to get the game noticed and out there by Zoe. And then it was hijacked by the people that turned into something completely different. And I'm glad that she was able to put that out there and explain that to us. I think that I've said enough on this subject because I don't want to be one of the people that keeps it going. I think that it's a time for us to come together. It's a time for us to not fall into the, you know, the whole fervor that's being created by the situation right now. And to just go, you know, just, there's, you know, one thing that I live in my life, one piece of advice I give to anybody is whenever you vehemently fight back against somebody, you just justified their fight. So the best thing to do is state your piece and walk away. And in this situation, the women that were affected by it so far did not have that opportunity because they had death threats. But I'm not sure what they did in the meantime. A lot of times when I have people coming after me, I mean, I had two men try to run me down in a parking lot because of what I am when I was leaving work one night. And, you know, over time, I just didn't let what people said about me bother me, and I just went about my day, and things tend to work themselves out. I think that in this situation, I need to read more. The article for Forbes spells it out in almost exactly the same manner that Pixie did, and it's almost like she wrote the article. You got to be very careful about what a subject is, because what it was at the beginning is far different than what we're talking about on the show today. On the show today, we're talking about, you know, these boisterous, you know, female gamer-hating people that are going after different people because of what they are. And what it started out with was a jilted boyfriend, which is what it seems like, that went after his ex-girlfriend and called her out on ways that she got her game to be noticed. So very different than what we're talking about, at least I think it is, right?
And I everything, agree.
What?
Yeah, everything evolves. Everything evolves. I mean, yeah. You look at, like, feminism back when women were fighting for women's suffrage. Like, it was, we just want to vote. Like, Seneca Falls right. Conference, yeah! Like, and now you have modern feminism, and it's all men are rapists. And, right. You know, it's things evolve, and it's, we need to make sure that when we evolve, and that when our culture evolves, that we do so in a way that isn't negative, and that isn't going to hurt generations in the future.
Do you know why they evolved, though, Pixie? Because you get to a certain point, and your goals have been achieved. But to get to your goals, you had to bring a whole bunch of people with you. The people that go, oh, that's great, we can vote, or, oh, that's great, this is over, leave whatever that movement was. And it leaves only the people that are fanatical about whatever they were there for running the show. So it gets hijacked in the end almost every time. And I think that's what happened here. And, you know, this one got hijacked by different people from what it was in the beginning.
I just want to jump in and say, you know, I respectfully disagree about contemporary feminism. I think that feminism has become a thing that has a lot of really important issues, but has become a dirty word in pop culture, such that a lot of people think that it's really misandrist. And I think, again, we're kind of talking about the loudest, most extreme voices sort of dominating the conversation. And I think that that's happening with just sort of feminism in general. I think that there's a perception of what feminism is in the mainstream that really doesn't reflect what feminism within our community is really talking about. And so I think that that happens just across the board everywhere. I really love what you guys are saying, though, about the important issues that the whole Gamergate conversation started, which I think really we're talking about sort of structural issues regarding inequality, bro culture. How do you get a game out as a relatively unknown studio or developer? These are all issues that the gaming community should be talking about. Instead, we're having conversations about how criminal it is to issue death threats over Twitter. And I think it's important that we say, right, and I think we've been saying over the show, it's not okay to issue death threats over Twitter. But
the federal,
like,
crime.
Yeah.
It's not a state,
right,
crime.
You're right that, like, we should have everybody across the board be like, yo, that's not okay. Now let's go back to having this conversation about journalistic ethics. Let's go back to having this conversation about bro culture. Rather than yelling at each other about who is and who isn't a gamer and allowing the misogyny to dominate the conversation, let's have the conversation we should be having, which is how can we come together as a gaming community and promote and make it easier for developers to make the kind of quality games that everybody wants to play.
Well, Jen, there's plenty of people out there that are speaking out about said things, like you talked about, why we can't get the mainstream media to pick up some of the things that are going on, other than the bad things. The Gamergate gets picked up, you know, the things about photos, whatever it may be, gets picked up in the mainstream media, but you don't see mainstream media picking up, Patrick Scott Patterson when he's talking about why we get labeled in Congress with violent video games being a major issue.
Oh my God! Can we talk about that?
You know what I mean? We can't have the great things that's going on within our culture.
It's because media is sensationalist.
Go ahead, Pixie.
I mean that's all it is. The media is sensationalist.
I'm not going to disagree with you there. But I think that it takes all of us together to be louder, to be boisterous than the trolls. And it takes things like this, what we're doing right now, coming together on a podcast, putting differences aside of the style or type of podcast that we are, but we're talking about things that affect all of us, one way or another, as you identify yourself as a gamer or someone who enjoys pop culture, whether it's comic books, manga, PC, console, or otherwise. We all feel the same effects, or we wouldn't be sitting right here.
Yeah. And I think it's ironic because, you know, as you point out, Carmen, like, the gaming community is pretty much a marginalized community or a marginalized culture. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how it's easy to be vilified as a gamer or at least, you know, shunned almost. Like, they want to blame violent video games for so much of society's ills. And I think that it's so ironic that we're sitting here dealing with this issue that's tearing the community apart, when really we're all on the fringes of society in terms of the things that we like. We're not part of, we're becoming more pop culture, but it really is a community that started out on the fringes, and we really can't afford to be tearing each other apart. We really should be coming together as a gaming community to really stick together, because, you know, when push comes to shove, in another couple of months, something else is going to happen, and somebody's going to be trying to outlaw violent video games again. And that's, you know, everybody's going to be saying, wow, it's these crazy great gamers who are committing all of these crimes. And that is just a fact of the gaming community, that we seem to just sort of allow that to just happen and make it even worse by being so divisive amongst ourselves.
Well, part of the symptom to that as a whole is a age demographic. You have to remember that myself, and I can include Nikki, we didn't grow up with video games. It's something that made its way into our lives and became part of our lives, as our parents were like, oh no, that's taboo, I don't want you spending that much time with it, but we'll introduce you to it and let you touch it, but then we're going to take it away. And then somewhere along in your lifestyle, it was, okay, I have to be responsible, be an adult, and get a job, but I still like this thing that is still taboo to the mainstream public. But generations like Pixie and maybe yourself, you were born into it. And my daughter, that technology is not going away. That is their lifestyle. That is always going to be there. So it's nothing abnormal to you. But the generation that became before Nikki and I, they still are like, that is the devil. Right. And Congress will always slap it down. It's never going to be mainstream, and it's going to take us another probably decade, sadly, for the people that understand what we're talking about and see it as a growth and a potential, not just revenue stream, but a way to change the future with technology and to do better for ourselves, that laws will be changed then. Unfortunately, it's just going to be an uphill battle until then. I mean, that's just what I think. What do you think, Nikki?
No, it sounds right. You know, I think back to the last election when they were picking on a politician from, I think it was either New Hampshire or from Vermont, but it was probably New Hampshire, that he played WoW, you know? Or it might have been a woman at the time. But they played WoW, and they used it against them in their campaign.
Did they really?
Yes, they did. Like, how could you trust somebody that's spending their time playing video games, you know? And I look at, you know, sports heroes like Curt Schilling, that, you know, he may have destroyed a game company, but he went out there and tried. And, you know, he was proud of playing World of Warcraft and other games like that. So I'm, you know, I don't think it's going to be a decade. I think the time is here, you know, Shivasta. I think it's now. I think that, you know, that was the last hurrah of people, and I think it made enough of the people that were watching raise an eyebrow and say, is playing a game really that bad? And I don't think it is. I think that, you know, now that we've got children going to school and, you know, graduating with honors and also being game players, I think that, you know, we're in that time of change where it actually is going to be, you know, it is going to be mainstream. You know, there was nothing wrong with coming home and playing Monopoly when you were younger. Why can't you come home and play The Sims, or come home and play, you know, Destiny or something like that with your kids for a little bit? You know,
I think
you're doing it together.
In our generation, that could be possible, but I don't foresee it for a while, because the simple fact is a lot of parents are not educating themselves enough on video game labels and ratings to be able to not for certain say that game did not affect my child. It's same thing back when records were played backwards and people thought it was, you know, oh my God, the world was coming to an end. It's going to take some time because people are ignorant
right.
of the facts. They're not wanting to do the research and put the time in. It's just like internet management and watching your kids, you know, to see if they're watching porn on the internet or on TV. If you don't monitor it and you don't educate yourself, I'm taking it away. That's the quickest answer for a parent.
Right.
Pixie, go ahead. I know you got something over there.
Nikki, though.
What's up, Dave?
I agree with Nikki, though. The time is now. Like, I'm 25. I could totally just, like, pop out a child any minute. Like, I'm still within childbearing. I grew up on video games. Like, I know about video games. I've been playing them for years and years and years. I know about the labels. There are plenty of people right now who are my age who could have children who are educated enough.
You know about the labels, but do you think Congress gives a crap about you and your labels if they're passing the laws? If, you know, do you think somebody in Congress is sitting saying, well, that game's got a what is the new rating for violent video games now?
M.
M?
It's got
M
an M.
For mature.
That's got an M. I'm going to pop it in. My aide's going to show me Hitman. And now everybody knows what's in Hitman. A little bit of violence, a little bit of blood, a little bit of language,
right?
Just
a tiny bit.
Now remember, I'm in Congress, and I'm above the age of Travasta, mid-40s. And I didn't grow up with video games. I'm going to pop that in. I'm going to watch that. And then I'm supposed to vote, it's okay? That's not going to happen.
But
reality is,
we're not a country.
It's not going to happen.
No.
We're not a country of censorship.
No, you're right.
Yeah, we're not, but it happens.
It happens in Britain.
Well, I think that what Carmen's saying is absolutely true. Like, the people who are legislating on video games are not the people who are playing video games. And I think that's basically your point. Correct me if
absolutely.
I'm wrong. I think that's your point.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so the problem is they're, you know, what they see is a screen capture of Call of Duty. And they're like, oh my God, he's got a gun and he shot someone with his gun. Clearly he's going to go shoot people with his gun in real life. And, like, it's absolutely absurd because they're judging an entire, not even just an industry, but an entire culture and community based on one screen capture of a game that they're not playing, that they don't understand. And completely in defiance of science and statistics. Like, for example, when Columbine happened, and other more recent school shootings, you always have a legislator that comes up and says, these are the video games this person played, this video game must have made this person, you know, commit a mass shooting. And while mass shootings are very tragic, it's very unlikely that the video game that this person played was a cause, because you've got millions of people who are playing these video games.
No, it's mental disturbances, it's psychological issues. Like, there's so much more at play than a video game.
Right. And actually, remember Columbine, they were going to blame Marilyn Manson, right? So, I mean, like, they just make up these ridiculous pop culture things that are this weird thing, quote-unquote, that the people were doing, and trying to blame this sort of fringe part of culture and saying that's the thing that made this person become violent, rather than to
what I was saying before, and then I'm going to cut off real quick, because the point you're making is we need to show the better side of us as gamers. Because what happens in the media, especially mainstream media, they take that negative and blow it out of proportion, and what do we have to show for it? You know, what do we have to show for it? So, again, posting things on social media, being boisterous, having a blog, having the platform that we have been given with this technology comes responsibility.
Oh, Spidey-san!
Okay.
Amazon? What's that? What's up with that?
I don't know who that person is, but that person is leaving now.
But that's okay. We'll roll on.
Who's Eminem? What are you getting rid of him for? That was cool.
How we kick Eminem? I don't understand.
I don't know Eminem.
What's up?
You might have talked to us.
Oh.
Okay.
And it begins.
This is hilarious.
What's going on?
People are joining the call, and I didn't even know they could do that.
Are you sure they're trolls?
Yeah, they're joining the call somehow. But
it's
in
all
any
right.
event.
So back to the topic at hand. Again, this only proves our point that once you start speaking about something and you have something to say, other people don't take it very well. No matter if it's positive, if it's for the betterment of the group of people that already have been oppressed and are fighting for equality, somebody just doesn't take it very well.
So, you know, we've got a couple more minutes before we wind this down. And one thing I kind of wanted to get into was, you know, I checked back in on the statistics, and something between 5 and 10% of designers and developers are women. And I don't know much about the gaming industry, but, you know, I come at the at geek culture more from the comic book side of things. And one thing that we've been sort of talking about in the comic book world is how to diversify the creative side. And there's been sort of a more of a push towards trying to promote independent studios, or sorry, independent publishers of comic books as sort of the way to get at more people of color as writers and artists, as well as more characters of color within pages of comic books. So I'm wondering, you guys who spend more time covering the video game industry than I do you think that that's a similar sort of approach that will help in the video game industry, where maybe what gamers need to be doing is helping to buoy up independent creators and sort of go outside of the mainstream developers and look for good talent elsewhere?
The indie game market has been amazing for female developers, just like the evolution of web comics was amazing for female illustrators. Like, those things allow women to have a push into a subsect of society and into a field that is a viable career choice for anyone of any gender that is harder to get into than a lot of people would imagine. And that's really a lot of it. Like, the indie game market is going to continue to thrive for quite a while. Because indie game developers are really listening to their markets. They're making games that are loved by people. Like, Octodad was hilarious. Couldn't put that game down. Like, I'm sorry. Like, my little tentacles and my, like, lack of a spine was hilarious. I must have played it, like, 6 different times all the way through. Like,
I'm addicted to that game in Best Buy. Like, I'll, like, start up the demo, and I'm like, oh my god, this is hilarious! And then, you know, my boyfriend drags me out of Best Buy, so I played the first 3 scenes, like, over and over and over
again. It's at Best Buy?
Yeah, it's, like, one of the loaded demos on the PS4. It totally is, and I totally go look for it. And for me, like, I just found, I'm sure you guys have probably already heard of this, but I just found Goddess, which is a Kickstarter video game that's basically a sandbox game, and I found it 2 days ago. And I am just freaking obsessed with it right now.
Yeah,
and
just watch out. That game is a remake of Populous from when I was a kid.
Mm.
Made by Peter Molyneux, and it's addictive, and you will start playing it and never stop.
It's like the Mighty Quest for epic loot.
Yes. You know, the indies, we have a really good established relationship with a lot of indie studios and more coming on board, and we think that the resurge of the the charitable goodwill, whatever you want to call it, of gamers in general will be overshadow this Gamergate crap by the indies, because the indies are able to speak freely. They're able to be very boisterous without fear of repercussions. Yeah. I mean, if you remember, there was an issue with a certain studio that has sports games, and they took a long time to come back because of issues in the media. And now, you know, issues with major studios, you know, it's timid. So we have spent a lot of time working with indies to be able to showcase them, to highlight them, and to make them feel loved and the games are great. I mean, a lot of the games that you see on Kickstarter or Indie Mega booth and at the... There's a couple websites that I'm not going to mention because I don't want to plug everybody, but these sites have indie games, and you can actually talk to the developer. You can have a conversation. You can ask those questions about the character development or what they're using or why they did this or that, and they will have a conversation with you on Twitter. And it's not a slap your hand because you want to know. It's because they want you to ask them those questions. Mm-hmm. It's about developing a game. How else would they be able to make it and understand the psyche that is us? Because we're complicated.
Mm-hmm. But it's that attention to us that, you know, the larger studios can't really give us, that I think is why they're making quality games. It's because they have that whole back and forth. And I think this brings the whole conversation full circle, that it's not really about female gamers versus male gamers. It's really just about people who want quality games and trying to help the industry build that. And that just includes listening to 48% of your consumer base who's saying, you know, I want more than the chainmail bikini. And that would just make things a little bit better for me. And that's all it really is. So we are at exactly an hour. And I think this has been a really fabulous conversation. And I really want to thank you guys for joining me today. So before I let you go, because I know that you guys have a lot of projects that you're involved in, I really want to give you a lot of time to plug them, actually. I think it would be great to hear from some of your favorite independent studios and let listeners know how they can support those projects. Because I think that's really the future of the gaming industry. And really also to plug your podcast and your charity, because I really want viewers to know those things. So if you guys just want to go down the line and plug your favorite projects and maybe also your favorite games.
Stacey, let's start with you.
Oh goodness. So Crowbite Studios made Among the Sleep. It's toddler horror. I love it. It's the only horror game I've played in, like, years and years and years that I basically, like, didn't crawl under a blanket and die of fright. Because I'm a super big baby when it comes to horror. Like, I just am. So I'm super excited about a Kickstarter called Phoenix Covenant. I'm going to be talking about that in an article later. So everyone should check that out. It's super, super awesome. It's Magic the Gathering meets Final Fantasy Tactics. Super good. Let me tell you what. And obviously, like, Infinite Crisis, I love Infinite Crisis, it's one of my favorite new MOBAs, and then Games of Glory, which is epic, when it's finally out of alpha, it's pretty much next-gen MOBA goodness, super excited about that, and then other than that, it's, like, back home and streaming for me.
Awesome. And Nikki, do you want to tell us a little bit about your favorite projects?
Yeah, well, my biggest project is always going to be anything I do on Star Citizen. I have quite a number of different shows I do at this point for it. Right now, I'm just trying to go through all the information from their Friday State of the Game convention that they have. They call it CitizenCon and hold it once a year. My passion is doing videos for that show and others, and my channel, you can find it on YouTube at youtube.com/StarCitizenAA. It's actually just my name, Nicole D'Angelo, and I do a lot of, well, I have a lot of things in the fire at once most of the time, but when they finally come out, believe me, I put my all into it and they will be good. I also do some out of the mainstream, nobody's ever heard of it, video cast every Friday night with the girls over here. So, yeah, and that's, you know, I have a passion. It seems that I keep getting myself on different shows and, you know, different podcasts each week, and I'm enjoying it. As far as what, you know, like Pixie brought out horror stuff, I just caught a glimpse of a game I might be downloading tonight to play, which is called Alien Isolation.
Ooh, so, yes.
Yeah, being somebody sure. that was old enough to remember that movie scare the pants off me the month it came out, the fact that this is made in the same design spec as the movie was is something that really, really interests me. So you might be seeing a couple of playthrough videos of that on my channel coming up.
Awesome. And last but not least.
Well, I'm looking forward to Grimm Brothers or Dragonfin Soup, because it's a sandbox and the main protagonist is a female, but not just a female in the aspect of being a girl, but she has a great thick plot line of why she is the way she is, what she's been through in her struggle to develop her character. And then she has some great skills that are earned along the way as you progress through the story and making your choices, which definitely sounds like right up my alley in being able to play something and play it in my game style. I'm a true MMOer. The one thing that speaks to me definitely right now is Borderlands prequel. All you people out there know that it just came out, and I am dying to get my hands on it. Gearbox, I love you. Thank you for making yet another another edition of my favorite game. As for what we've got going on, Ladies of the Roundtable, or Lort Nation, is going to be launching our own Lort Crate. And basically, the Lort Crate is going to be filled with all kinds of goodies from a bunch of people around the kingdom, as we call it, that are supporting our charity, as well as just jumping on the bandwagon for Geeks for Equality. And we're going to be auctioning that off once a month starting in mid-November. And so far, we have probably about $500 to $1,000 worth of products inside this crate that you can win. And all the proceeds go to our scholarship foundation. And that's just one thing that we're doing. We also have our new live RPG show that's going to be coming up. And you can actually apply on the website to have a seat at our table for our live RPG show. So if you're a tabletop player and that sounds interesting to you, and you want to get on camera and you got a mic and you think that a night of, you know, some 20-sided die and your friend from Australia on cam is the way to go, there's a place for you as well.
Awesome.
The website, lortnation.com, easy peasy. Find us over there with all of our goodies and freelance writers. We love you. Thank you for contributing.
Awesome. So it sounds like it's really busy for everyone listening, and we actually did have 5 viewers who were streaming this podcast the entire hour. So I want to thank you guys for sitting through all of this, as well as the 3 trolls who attempted to join and were immediately ejected. Thank you for that as well. If you are interested in everything that the Ladies of the Roundtable are doing, again, your URL is lortnation.com. That's where you can check out all of the writing, all of the awesome podcast episodes, as well as the scholarship fund that Carmen was just talking about. And again, you can find me at reappropriate.co or on Twitter at reappropriate. Again, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank the entire panel for joining me. And also want to thank all of you guys who are listening. And if for some reason you feel desperately like you want to download this episode because you didn't hear enough of it the first time around, or if you missed this episode and need to be hearing it after it was recorded live, you can download it or you can stream it through YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel, or you can subscribe to me on the iTunes store. And this podcast will be available tomorrow for download at reappropriate.com. So thanks everybody very much for joining us, and I want to give a final shout out to the podcast episode next in 2 weeks. I will be bringing on again my guest, James, who is tweeting from at Snoopy Jenkins, and we're going to shift gears completely, and we're going to actually be talking about affirmative action and mismatch theory. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you next week, everybody.